everyone, and welcome back to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler, and I'm so happy that you've joined us. Our mission is to provide stories and resources that will give you inspiration to explore all of the possibilities that your life can be. The possibilities are limitless, and guess what? So are you. It begins with believing. Believing in yourself, believing that the future is yours to write, believing that you can not only write your desired future, but that you have everything that you need to write it, edit it as needed, and fully and wonderfully live it. And you don't have to wait. You can start today. The pen truly is in your hand. I cannot wait to share this week's conversation with you. Today, we're going to have a great conversation about thriving through change. My guest is currently a membership manager with the Girl Scouts of Southeast Florida. Her 35-year career path is grounded in higher education administration, having worked at six different institutions, including Cornell University, University College London, and Florida Atlantic University. She is the founder of TeamWorks, a consulting company dedicated to building stronger teams and leaders of integrity, positivity, and action. She sailed as a student affairs staff member on the summer 2014 semester at Sea Voyage, a floating university, educating for global understanding through experiential learning. She authored the book, A Year of Nothing New, Tools for Living Lean and Green, chronicling a year of conscious consumption and a values realignment and how one spends their time, money, and energy. As a result, she was the green living expert on the live local morning show, Good Day Rochester, where she shared tips for taking care of our planet and ourselves. And by the way, if you want a copy of her book, follow the link. There is a link to her email address, and she's happy to send you a copy of that book if you would like to. So that'll be in the show notes. Her name is Kristen Scarry, and I cannot wait for you to meet her. Kristen, thank you so much for joining me today.
Good morning. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks. This is going to be fun.
Oh my goodness. I've been looking forward to this. I mean, well, we were talking about it before we actually started. I mean, we've known each other. Well, we met many, many years ago, kind of briefly, but the connection kind of stuck.
Yeah, I think 10 years, at more than 10 years.
I think more. I think it was like 2008, 2009. That's when I first started doing Key Leader.
That's right. Mm. Well, I appreciate the ongoing. It is exciting and just wonderful and very comforting, I think, to have circles that come back and people that come back, and really fun. Just this.
Yeah. The other thing I love about it too is it kind of goes to show that, like, just because maybe, you know, people really make an impression. And those relationships, even though maybe sometimes they're not as active as we'd like, they're still there, you know, kind of running in the background.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
And more than ever, these relationships are essential.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you. Thank you for being here. So why don't you, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself. And I know a lot has happened in last 5 years for you?
I will. Kristen Scarry in a nutshell. I was thinking back. So 5 years I've been in Florida, and in that 5 years time, I left a place that I'd been in for 20 years and very involved in a community, upstate New York in Fairport, the neighborhood, a friendship circle, a really nice work circle, and volunteering. I was working in the schools. And so the move was to be closer to family. And so that was just it was an easy move in that way. Tough move in others. I had nightmares before the move. I cried every day. I was selling my house and really uprooting for this other great opportunity. So it wasn't, there was of course sadness always in leaving, and then joy in what's ahead. And I love the adventure of travel and moving. I had to plot out a 3-day drive with two cats in the car and get to Florida, which is great. So it was about 5 years ago that I moved here and did not have a position at the time, knew I would find something. And I was grateful to get a position at Florida Atlantic University and was there for a couple of years and then kind of pieced some things together. And now I work for the Girl Scouts, which is an amazing bookend. My adventure in life started with camp and Girl Scouts and all those things. So it's really cool. I hope this is kind of the bookend to work life too. But then moving here, just being with family and starting over and all the things that come with a big change of a move. Anyone who's moved knows the terror, joy continuum of what it's like to start over. And it takes a while. It takes at least, I think, 3 years, if not more. I'm still in because we had the great pause of 2020. I think just when I was getting to the point of reestablishing and reconnecting, we had the kind of the timeout. And I'm just grateful now to be working at a place that supported us through that time period. And, you know, from the work side of things, I'm quite stable, which I'm really, really grateful for. And for an organization that I love and have always loved. So that's a huge blessing. And then 2 years ago, Mom moved here. So now we're together, which is wonderful and huge change for her. So we together helped sell her house that she'd been in for 60 years.
And, oh, man.
You know, huge change. So also the privilege of going through that with her. And I still had stuff in the house, which, you know, that's cute. And then also like, let's take the things out of the house now. And so did my brother. But then the relief of having, for one, done it together and now have that great piece of the security of having Mom here and us being together and which is wonderful. And then the Girl Scout story, she was my troop leader for 10 years. So our relationship is so established because of that. We've camped and out in the heat and the cold and driven to weird places and done all kinds of things together. So it's just a really interesting, that thread that weaves through is pretty cool. And then just thinking, you know, of what we're talking about today of change and resilience. You know, I know that I'm on a continuum of what many other people have experienced, so much more change than I have, and others that have experienced less or have always stayed in the same place or whatever. But I keep coming back to the main reason, which was to be near family. So now we're all together within 15 minutes of each other. And then, you know, just gratefully having a work life that supports me and that we're quite secure in that respect.
Yeah.
So it's been wonderful. And then just always seeking what's staying the same. And we've been doing some great professional development for ourselves with the Girl Scouts too, especially last year of how do you identify in times of utter change and so much unknown, which we're still in, which we're always in. Like,
that's right.
But it's all brought to mind this past year of what we think we know and what we don't know. Of what do you keep coming back to, and what is the foundation or the touch point or cornerstone or whatever that is. So it continues to be family for me and our faith base and other things that we keep trying to find the steady place, even though all around us is storm.
Yeah. I love that. Finding the steady place. So what stays the same even through the change?
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot. How can people do that? Like, how did you do that?
It's magic. No,
there's no one else can do it.
Self-talk of this is going to be great. This is going to be fine. I'm fine. Everything's awesome. I think that's real. And joking about it, it is really important. What am I saying to myself? Am I saying this is awful or this is not going to work as opposed to we got this. It's okay. Let's remind me again what I need to be grateful for. Remind me again of what's the same. And it could be one thing. And so I think it's a great exercise of what's staying the same. And then it sounds, this is not a new idea, but the gratitude of, so what am I grateful for? And it's micro joy or it's micro gratitude. And it could be, we have food in the fridge and the place we live in is safe. I have some time where I can spend some free time with family, or we've just built in volunteering at the Humane Society, my mom and my nephew and I. So we do that together, which is a little bit of a fun, like a new thing. I love the routine. And then to add these little things, it's every Friday. So we have a part of the week that's time together, kind of guaranteed time together. So I think that literally whether someone keeps a journal or has that conversation with themselves or with someone else, but of constantly identifying what is the same, even if it's a very, very small list. And I think turn down priorities too. And I had a great experiment that I did in 1 year. And I think we talked about this, but where I didn't buy anything new for a year and ended up writing a book about it. It was a blog and then turned it into a book, which was amazing and great experience in itself. What was happening to me was I was spending 10% on everything and 100% on nothing.
Oh,
spread so thin that it looked like I was doing a lot, or it maybe felt like I was doing a lot, but I really, it was so thin.
Yeah.
Prepared back, including some friendships, some relationships that weren't priorities that I was trying to keep alive that had their season, I guess.
Yeah. That really resonates. Yeah. Cause I think we fall into that, right? Cause we get so busy with so many different things. We have so much on our plate. So how did you, during that year, how did you go about prioritizing?
I knew that, so the experiment happened by chance. I had met someone who had done a similar experiment and I decided on the spot to do that. And the opportunity allowed me to reprioritize. So not only financially, which was good, which was the simple exercise too of what do you have, what do you want, what do you need? And almost always, whatever you think you want, you already have. So I don't need another cute turquoise bench, even though it looked pretty great on Facebook Marketplace, but yeah, we did get that turquoise. Well, we don't need another turquoise bench, but you know, so on the trivial side of things, but it also helped me then prioritize even basic needs. And I combed through all my bills and saved money in places here and there. And it also prioritized my time. So I knew I wanted to volunteer. So I let some other things go with children in a school. So I let some other committee responsibilities go. And those are hard. I think that those decisions, because we feel we're supposed to have all these other things on our resume, as if going to work and having your life besides work isn't enough. We have to have the committee work and the volunteering and all the extra. And I value that. And then do I have to have 10 extras? What if 2 to 4 on Fridays at the Humane Society is enough?
Right.
What if that's enough?
So, Kristen, are those some of the shoulds that enter into our thinking? Yeah, I should be doing that. I should be doing this. Or, you know, or am I in the weeds?
I agree. And there's the shoulds and the theys. So who is they? Because they say that we're supposed to have things on our resume besides your work and others.
Yeah. Yeah. Who is the they?
Who is they?
Yeah. That's a great point. So, all right. So I'm hearing, because I think when we talked before, you kind of had 4 areas, right? There was self, the one-to-one, your circles, and bigger than you. So this seems like the self type of, I guess, like, is this what you're talking about? Like, how do you take care of yourself through this? Or how do you know what I mean?
I think so. And when I first was jotting some notes, it felt selfish to start with self. And I thought I should start with bigger than you in my mind. And one of the themes for me is I don't take enough care for myself. And if I were telling myself as a best friend, I would keep saying that to myself. You think I would have gotten that lesson by now. And again, someone said it, they said I should have learned this before. So I'm learning it now, which is wonderful, that when I swim at the pool that's a mile down the road, so there's no excuses, when I take a little time to walk with mom outside, when I take the time with family, that builds back the ability to go back into work 100% or to get better sleep or to not eat, hypothetically, all the potato chips at 10 o'clock at night and to do better care for myself. And, you know, gratefully, mom and I, because we're here all together all the time, we give each other that kind of support and feedback. So when I am not doing as much as I could with her, for her, we get to have those conversations. And we've had one recently too, where I was just giving away too much and I need to kind of, and it's hard, it feels selfish. I'm someone who loves to contribute and offer help. And I don't always ask for help when I should. And that's a good should probably. And I think it does start with me. So that I would tell all my friends and family that of, are you doing enough to feed your soul with your hobby or your activity or your downtime. And my dad would always say, you need time to call your soul your own. And so that needs to get back in the self-talk for me too.
I'm writing that down. I love that. So time to call your soul your own. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful way of saying it. Because nothing happens if we don't take care of ourselves.
Absolutely.
I mean, we can't be there for somebody else. And to clarify now, your mom lives with you, right? You guys? Yeah. Okay. And I just have to say this too. I think I told you this when we were talking before, but when we were talking before, you said something about when your mom was, you know, when she was moving in, you were thinking about, okay, how do we make this work for her? How does she become part of the decisions? And, you know, it wasn't like, oh, geez, mom's moving in. I'm going to, you know, she's, you know, whatever. It was very much a collective. How do we create this together? And I just loved that because I thought it was so caring. And it seems like you guys have done a really great job with that.
So now you're going to make me cry. But it's because of the banked time that we had in Girl Scouts. Oh. And then of course, all along the way too. So, you know, it was a friendship started early on. And then also in conversation with my brother and his wife, who I consider a sister, this was the way that it was going to happen. So everything from what furniture would come so that there was familiarity and comfort with the things that she owns and how do we blend our things together? And it's a wonderful setup. So we have our own space and then we have great shared space in the middle. And then how do we find things that feel like Florida together? And I just looked out my window at green space and water, which was wonderful. And it seemed I never questioned that. So we live together as opposed to she lives with me or I live with her. And the other challenge was that she and I had both lived alone for a very long time. So I've always lived alone. And for the last 20 years since Dad passed away, 20 plus, she's lived alone. So we had some learnings together as roommates too, which was, but also easy because she's my mom and we're also friends and it's wonderful.
Yeah. Wonderful. I really admire it. It seems so intentional, mm-hmm. so thoughtful. And I loved how you put it that you guys live together. It's not that she lives with you or vice versa. So sorry, I just wanted to say that because I keep thinking that throughout the interview, because I just love that. I think it's a beautiful way to approach it. And I think it goes to show how intentional you are with things. So
well, I appreciate you saying that because I don't think about that because it seems so natural and obvious that we would do it that way. And we decided together and she was also willing and excited and she was extracted out of a network of people and she doesn't miss winter, neither do I, because from Wisconsin, it was a pretty slick move to get to a place where there's sunshine every day. So I'm pretty grateful for that. And we're still learning, you know, we still work on it. And I think that matters in terms of you're never really done working on that. And the proximity helps. So even with my brother who lives 15 minutes away, we're in the same town. So we can stop over and say hello. And he and I swim together often at the lap pool. And there's connection that can only take place when you live near someone. Mm-hmm. And although those were changes, those were helpful, positive ones. I think sometimes people think change is only bad.
Yeah.
Be very positive and affirming and exciting.
Yeah. Well, and I think, Kristen, I think that, you know, when you were talking about preparing to move, right? And you said that it's that the continuum between the joy and maybe the terror or the sadness, because it was a positive move to move to Florida to be near your family, yet you can still experience the moments of sorrow or whatever it might be, or the tensions that come up. And I think it's a really important point that change, or that even though it's a good change, it's still a change. Mm-hmm.
You know, do you know William Bridges' work on change?
Oh, yeah.
His iceberg of how the change is the tip and then all the stuff underneath the surface. I use that so much work-wise and personally to think about it's the change itself, but the aftermath or the transition that can take months or years or decades in some cases.
Yeah.
And then there's freedom and comfort in that too. I think I'm seeking comfort, like mashed potatoes that I had for dinner last night.
sounds good.
Yes. Let's talk about food as a comfort tool. I think the comfort is in the permission to go through the transition. Mm. That it's not going to be done. There's no done time, or there's no done time frame. That it just at some point you'll feel, this is now I can work on something else, or that part of the transition is over. The logistics of a change, I think, are easier than the maintenance or the relationship part of things. I haven't seen a lot of my friends in a long time because of everything. I won't be traveling probably until the fall. But we talk on the phone, and for a while when Zoom was new, we did that. And then we still do now and then, but I think that helped get through a time period where we felt so isolated. And I still appreciate, we do a lot of our work stuff on Zoom still too, which has been great. I mean, we're keeping some of it, even though we're starting to meet in person again. So I think it's a wonderful, wonderful tool, personally and professionally.
Yeah. It allows us to have a really nice blend, you know, now. And going back, Kristen, because William Bridges, I love his work. Do you want to just give us, just for those listeners maybe who aren't familiar with his work, just kind of a high level about the iceberg? Because I think it's, his stuff is so helpful.
He's great. So however we need to credit his work. So William Bridges.
Yeah. He's the genius.
Genius. And he uses that. And I know that there's another source for that too. But he uses that in understanding that it's about managing transition, not managing the change, because change is that tip of the iceberg, events that take place and they're once and done. It's a thing that happens at a time. So the move happened and the logistics of it, and we're in a new place and you get a new internet provider or a new electric provider. You're in a new place. You unpack your things. Those are still all the changes. And then after that is where now I find a job. Now I have to get comfortable living in Florida. I have to learn my way around town. I have to deal with missing people and relationships that change because of the distance or the move or the time. And that's the 95% of the iceberg under the waterline that takes a long time. And then everyone has experienced those changes in different ways at different times. So the move I was in the move because it was my move, but then helping with mom's move. So just because she got here doesn't mean she's done dealing with the transition. So she's 2 years in, she talks on the phone with people and she's still learning her way around, finding a place, all the things that seem trivial, but where we get groceries, or it's a different store. It's Publix, not Wegmans. It's where do you get your haircut, and joining a new church, or, you know, all the things. And that takes a long time, years, to say, oh, now I live here. And now this is my new home. And so I think that's kind of he uses that to describe it. And then he also talks about endings, and then this neutral zone in the middle of the chaotic wilderness, I think is his term. And then the getting to the beginnings, and how often we say, well, you're here now, so get over it. And we don't allow ourselves, or often others, to experience an ending and putting endings on it. And what are you bringing with you from the old way to the new way, or from the old place to the new place? And how do you have, as much as these things around are material things, they're reminders of, you know, where you used to live, or that particular life or chapter of your life that you had, and how important that is too, of how do you bring the... So part of feeling better about the ending and being able to put closure is to bring some of that forward, to be ready for a beginning. And the other thing that I love, the last piece is in that in between the neutral zone, is the weirdest place. This can be the scariest place, and then the most creative place of if you're ever going. I love that. Have you experienced that too?
I have to remind myself of that, Kristen, because the neutral zone, it is where, how did he put it? When things are the most uncertain, that's where creativity is at its highest potential. But it feels freaking scary to be there, because I'm one of those people, like, I love closure. I love certainty. And you just have to, like, surrender yourself to, but by naming it, I'm a big person. If I can name something, like, okay, I'm in a neutral zone, it helps me relax a little bit.
I agree. And if you say it out loud in the store, you might have to explain.
I'm in a neutral zone. No, you're in the dairy section.
Bananas are right down there. So good luck. Yeah. Yes, I love that. And I think it's uncomfortable in there. And we used this, his work at work also, of when we were trying to manage last fall, where when we're an organization with the Girl Scouts that like thrives and survives with in-person contact and girls getting together, meeting and being in their schools. And although it was a little bit better this fall than it was in the spring, but we changed a lot of things and tried to shift with what was happening and came up with some really, really exciting programs that many of them will carry over or might look a little bit different, but it is, I see it at work a lot. And I think I need to apply that more at home too, or personally, of, you know, how else can I get creative about, and again, the continuum, I guess, of micro issues to macro, but how can I better use the workspace that I'm in? Should we be doing different things with the time that I have? Am I using my time to the best, you know, to best ability, and then still allowing downtime and all those things? But yeah, that his work really helps.
And it's so powerful. I love his work, you know. And when you were talking there about people do this all the time, I think we do it to ourselves, and I think maybe other people might do this to us. But it's like, okay, the event has happened. Get over it,
right.
You know. And I was at you know this. I live where the big fire came through, so 198,000 acres that surround us are just gone. I was at our little local grocery store and I was talking to the owner there. And when I say local, this is like, I don't know, Mayberry may have had a bigger grocery store than our little local store. I mean, it's like, it's the wooden floors. I mean, but anyway, I was talking with her and she has a dog as well. And a lot of the dogs don't like walking in a burn area because it still smells like soot, and it's not pleasant. I mean, there's no trees. There's nothing. It is burnt earth. The rocks are burnt. The dirt is black. I mean, it's just burnt. And she was saying, you know, I know that the fire happened 6 months ago. And she's like, but I'm still feeling it, because where she used to go hiking with her dog is gone. I think she said their four favorite places to walk their dog is gone. They're gone. I mean, so it's like, yeah, the fire's passed, but we're still finding our way through, you know? So I just try to be compassionate around that. Because I think, yeah, it's easy. I had someone on the show once. This was a long time back in the fall. And she was saying when her husband died, like after the funeral, people were like, okay, well, it's time to move on. And she's like, time to move on? Like, wait a minute. No, that takes time. So I love giving ourselves that grace and giving other people the grace too, to say it takes whatever it takes, you know? Not that we're dwelling, because I think there is a point where maybe it becomes dwelling, but it just, that's why I think Bridges work is so important.
Oh, I agree. And I have to work hard. And I think lately I've been with reminders from mom to be more gracious to people who seem to be misbehaving. So whether that's while I'm driving on the highway or while someone in the store seems negative, or whether it's something on TV, wherever it is, but she's wonderful about, now you don't know what's going on for them. And then my child in me is like, well, I don't care. They weren't. And how do I, of course I would want someone to give me that grace. So I have to work hard. And there's a stress piece happening now too, of just, I mean, all the things that we all are managing. So I'm under stress. I'm not as good with offering grace to others. And that's a constant reminder, you know. Thankfully, I have a family network too, and we always are trying to remind ourselves of that. But it's nice to have mom down the hall saying, "Now you really need to be real nicer to her. You're right.
You're right." But why are they taking up the whole aisle at the grocery store?
Yeah, no, I've opinions about driving here. Yeah. It usually shows up there. I'm better in the grocery store.
My goodness.
And then, to just decide that just doesn't matter and be the best driver that I can be. And then go from there. But yeah, I think I agree. It's offering the same grace, that we would to ourselves, to others, and very good reminders. And, I think in that time period too, how can I be other focused? Because then it takes off the woe is me. I don't ever feel the woe is me, but when I have the moments of, oh, this is so hard. Well, let me just take a minute. Who can I call who might need a phone call today? Who can I text, or who can I say, I'm just thinking of you. I don't need anything. Just hi. And I love you. And how can I just do that more often? It doesn't take long to write a text or even to say, can we talk next week? Or just, I'm thinking of you, anything, especially with the distance with most time circles, to be other focused kind of takes the sadness away. Or
And I love that. The, who can I reach out to, just to say, I don't need anything. Just want to say, hey, or I'm thinking about you or whatever. So Kristen, is that kind of what you mean when you're talking about the bigger than you?
I think so. And I think trying, if it's, so I'm also a visual learner, so it's probably concentric circles of taking care of yourself in the middle, but the bigger than you. And, mom and I were watching the news in January and we were watching TV last summer with riots and all the things that were happening, and they weren't here. And so they were here, but they weren't outside the window. They were, some things were happening in our area, but not even much, as much here as in other places. And there's so much news and there's so much bad news. So I think what's the balance between, I feel responsible to understand what's happening in the world. There's so much I don't know, but so how can I be aware so that I'm appreciative of the pretty much peace that we have here right now, at least for today, and then still be, I guess, empathetic to, for one, that not everyone has the peace that we have today in our, where we are, but then also not letting it be overwhelming. And when do I turn off the news? And when do I stop looking at what isn't really news on my phone? Or, to where are my news sources? And how can I filter? What conversations can I have to learn from my family and friends? And maybe we don't have to watch the news, but I can get opinions from my family on what they think is happening or what they know is happening elsewhere. And so I think that I feel, because this is now one planet and we're on one planet. I have a t-shirt that says there's no planet B. So we're together, and what happens in other places does affect us here and or affects me, whether it's directly or indirectly. So I always feel responsible to have some concept of what's going on in the world, and for just that reason alone. So, because I'm not going to go teach a class on it, I'm not going to plan a conversation necessarily, but it helps me see where I am in the big scheme of things.
Yeah.
That helps. And then I think just the gratitude, but the balance, there's so much news that it doesn't serve me. And I think I have a great friend, and she's a key leader friend too. We've talked about her, Wendy Frazier.
Oh yeah.
Great at filtering. Will this news help me feel more positive? Is what I'm about to read, going to add to my life or take away, or is it neutral? And so it's a little bit of the Hippocratic oath of like, first do no harm. So am I going to do harm to myself by reading this? And then that's an easy decision. And then if it doesn't add and it's just neutral, why even bother?
Yeah.
And I'm only ever going to read good news because it might help me, even though it's hard to read. Or maybe it's a sad story, but maybe it helps me understand a bigger picture of something. But I like that because I let too much in of the news that isn't even really news, or it's just too negative or too sad that it takes away from my ability to not function, but to then contribute somewhere else or be 100%, or to, I guess, I don't know. I think it's all about still the balance and the,
what kind of comes to mind as you're talking there. And I love that from Wendy. And of course she's so measured in those things. I mean, she's just so great that way.
Yes.
What came to mind is like, we want to be aware. We want to be so that we can care and we can be empathetic. And if there's a way to be helpful, we can. And I think that there's a point where if it just is wearing us out, then that detracts from our ability you know, it detracts from ourself, and that detracts from our ability to be caring and to be helpful and you know, to be at our best. Mm-hmm. You know, my dad is 88. He lives with my one sister. He was telling me, because my dad used to start the day by watching the news. He'd watch, you know, when he was, I mean, he worked when we were kids, but like when, once he retired, he'd watch the midday news, and he watched the news at 5 and he watched the news at 10. That's what I did, you know? Right. And he's like, I can't do that anymore. Cause they live about 70 miles south of Chicago. Every day in the morning, they talk about how many stabbings, how many, you know, all the crime. And then with COVID, and he's like, I can't take that much in. And he said, what he found is in the morning, if he watched the news, he said, my whole day, that's how it started, you know? And he's like, it's hard to pull yourself up out of that. So what he's done is he watches the news. I think it's at the 4:30 or 5 o'clock news. Cause now he's had a good day. You know, he's solid. He watches it, but it's not the last thing he sees before he goes to bed. Cause he said that it disturbs him too much. And I thought, that's kind of a good, it works for him, right? And I think we have to find what works for us. But my dad's funny. I just can't start my day that way.
That's so great. And that's such interesting self-awareness too, to step out and say, is this really helping me?
Yeah. That's, is it contributing somehow?
Right.
You know, and I think, you know, to that, what you shared about Wendy too, I think so many times we don't really pay attention to what am I putting into my brain? You know, because what goes into our brain greatly affects who we are and who we become.
It does.
You know? So, all right. So that was kind of the bigger than you. And you've talked a few times about remaining grateful. Do you have a specific practice around that?
I have. So at one point when I was driving probably an hour both ways to work, I had a friend who also started her work day at the same time. And we have maintained this. We don't talk every day right now, but we did talk every day during the week. So during my drive, which was traumatizing, again, driving in Florida, my brother says, you have to drive as if everyone here is trying to kill you. So that's positive. So, but whenever we'd talk on the phone, and we do it now, the very first thing we say is grateful. And so instead of just hello and how are you, the phone rings, we just say grateful. And then the other person says grateful. And then we tell each other something good. So at the peak of some of my work stress, and certainly this past year too, of to find the good things, and whether it was her niece's health that had turned a great corner, or a bookstore that she had gone to. And so that's the micro joy, I think, piece of it for me, of what tiny thing can I be grateful for today? So it's really on small, pretty small levels. And to just, it's a lot of in my mind of, okay, I'm grateful for this, or that was a nice conversation, or how can I be appreciative of something that happened on a work call? And how can I tell that person that? So saying thank you a lot to other people also reminds me.
Yeah.
To be grateful myself. And I think just, you know, physically, I'm still, I don't know how, by some miracle, still able to get into a pool and swim, preparing for a race that's in 2 weeks, which I started preparing 2 weeks ago. So this is plenty of time. I hope it's not plenty of time, but I'm grateful that I can still get in and swim and swim a long enough distance to be able to do this race in 2 weeks. I don't know, that could end tomorrow, but just grateful for my physical ability, and I guess that's trying to be in the moment more of just today's focus. And I am always in the future. In addition to being an expert worst case scenario, I am also an expert, let's see what I can worry about tomorrow or maybe 10 years from now. So I could do workshops on how to worry and who I'm bringing that in and just be here today. And while I'm good today, I have lots of things to do and things to get done. And for today, I'm good.
Yeah.
So always reining it in to the current moment and focus on what I have, not what I think I'm going to need, and fulfill my responsibilities and all of those things. I'm not ever worry free, I suppose.
No, but when you were, I think we share a lot of similarities because I've always thought, man, if worrying were an Olympic event, you're looking at the gold medal winner. Like maybe you could give me a close run for it, but so really being centered in on the here and the now. And This is my own. Of course, I when I hear things like, there's this great app I love. It's called Healthy Minds. And it's based, it's a scientist who put it together. It's based in neuroscience. It's a free app. Highly recommend this thing. Highly. And they have different meditations. And what I love about that is there's an active meditation, like if you're walking or doing something, and then there's a seated meditation, and I tend to be a little hyper. So the active meditation works better for me. But then they also mix in like these 5-minute, you know, mini lectures on why this is important. So months ago, I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy on the app was talking about finding ways to really be present in the moment. And I think he was also talking about gratitude. But my riff on it was, every day, make the commitment to today, when I'm out for a walk, let's say, I'm going to find a moment of beauty and I'm going to stop and be present with it. And that to me, Kristen, has been, it just, because nature's my thing. And that's probably where that brings out the most gratitude for me, appreciation, and it's beauty. And that's really powerful. And it was something that you were talking about, the micro joys and the micro moments. It's not like it has to be something big. It could be, I don't know, noticing a bird here's a great example. We're driving through the burn area the other day, and there's this portion of it where the grass is coming back and it's so green. And then I noticed there are these yellow flowers coming up in it. And I'm like, if that's not the ultimate visual or renewal, I don't know what is. I mean, and then of course I'm a sap. So I had to pull to the side of the road because I started crying like, oh my goodness, you know, but it was just, but noticing it, paying attention so we can see it instead of rushing by it.
Oh, I agree. And I tend to, I'll see the pretty bird, and we have pink birds here. So why I need to be overwhelmed every time. And again, mom is better at it than I am. And we have a great blue heron that's out here pink bird, especially. I mean, please, like, it's pink. And instead of saying, yep, I see it, nice pink bird, I need to say, I'm going to go out and look at it. Or let me actually take a moment and look at it instead of the, you know, the pass by appreciation. Cause I think for me, it's easy to say, oh yeah, I noticed that. It's different, like you said, when you stop, physically stop and notice it and take a moment. Doesn't have to be long, probably a minute, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I need to do that. Pause.
Pink birds, come on. You got to take a picture of one.
Yes.
I want to see it.
But I need to go outside. I don't need to take it through the screen like, I took a picture. I know.
Yes. Yeah. Check.
It's not a checklist.
Not a checklist. And I think sometimes I think the gratitude practice, it can be, okay, did I say that I was grateful today? Well, we're missing the point, you know, and I have to say, I've been plenty guilty of that too. This is something that I have to work on. And it's an area that I put intentional effort because I need to. And I know we're getting close to the end of time, but I wanted to ask you the one thing we didn't talk about yet, the your circles. Tell us a little bit when you're thinking about resilience, thriving through change, how does your circles, what does that mean and why is it important?
When I was thinking about that, I thought at that I'm grateful. So I know that not everyone has this. So it's an extreme gratitude for me that I have different circles of friends that I've been able to maintain, and then new ones are growing. So because of the proximity of my family here, my family circle is strengthening in ways that couldn't happen when I wasn't here. You're always good. And there's no substitute for popping over to the house. And my older nephew even said it the other night. He came home. Mom and I were there for something. And he walked in. He said, oh, look, because you live here, you just popped over. And when I came home, you just happened to be here because you live here. And it was sweet that he would notice it and then say it. But the benefit of that, so that circle gets strengthened. And then just creating other circles. So how can I cultivate those circles? So my work circle. How can I, especially because we're distant, call and check up? There's 5 of us on the team, plus some others and our great supervisor. How do we all stay connected to each other? How do I keep that circle strong? And then how do I build other circles? I'm hoping that some of the friendships I'm making with the people at the pool could I do more with that? Could I find another circle of people that mountain bike or exercise or swim the same way? that I do. I think the Humane Society connection could become a circle for our volunteerism. And it doesn't have to go on a resume. At one point, I thought, maybe I just don't need to have, I need a resume. Maybe I don't need to keep adding things to it anymore. So what if I took away that? Where are the circles that I want to have and that I want to build? And the resume is for myself, not for any other purpose. But then I think, too, we've gotten to know people in our little neighborhood here. It's a circular apartment complex and lots of dogs. So we meet the people.
Oh, yeah.
I know the dog names. I don't always remember the human names. And it's
That's
so
typical.
Fun. It's so great. And so we know we've gotten to know people. And there were lots of outdoor gatherings last summer, especially when people couldn't go anywhere. So we got to know a lot of people last summer. And that's been really nice. So I appreciate that because we are in hurricane season now too. So which is amped up time. Usually it's not until August or September, October, as I've learned in the couple of years here, but there's times where even with short relationships that people come together during those times. So I'm appreciative of building the relationships here for no other purpose. And it's nice when things do happen that we're more able to check in on each other of, are you okay? Or are you staying? Is there something that you need? Are you okay? You know, I think that will be a nice, continue to build that neighborhood connection here.
Yeah. Cause it's important. It's important not to be alone, you know? And I loved how I made a note of it. I should have warned you ahead of time. I make a lot of notes. So it's like, I told a guest, I did his interview last Friday and I'm like, by the way, if you see me looking down and writing, it's not like I'm bored and I've checked out. But I don't like how you put that. Where are the circles that I want to build? That's really good. So Kristen, I've loved this. I knew I was going to love this conversation. Tell us a couple things about a little bit about your book and then where can people find you and connect with you if they want to?
Great. The book, if someone would like one, they should just email me and I will send it to them. And if you want to include that, it's kscary@gmail.com.
Perfect.
So send me a note. I would love to. I have a couple boxes left, but pretty much disperse those freely. And just love that experience. I remind myself all the time of what it means to think about the wants, the needs, and the haves. And what do I already have that I can, whether it's a tangible thing or not, or the friendships or the relationships, whatever that is, but staying focused on what do I already have in place that can serve me and therefore serve others in that way. And I think I would like to do enough. So it was nothing, a year of nothing new.
Ooh, okay.
I would like to do a year of nothing new in Florida because it was really a local book. It was about living, you know, being a locavore, getting food from within 100-mile radius of understanding the seasonal foods that grow and what's accessible basically within your arm's reach. And I've been here 5 years now, so I've learned a little bit more. Also, things grow here all the time. So
very different
in January. And so the food part of it's really interesting to me too. And certainly part of living in a new region. But
yeah.
I think that would be fun. I need to think about, you know, why I would be doing that. And would it be just for me or could I offer that as a tool for others? But
yeah.
That was significant. That was a lot. It was 2010 and it's still things I think about and I've still had some opportunities to talk with people about that. And there was so much learning personally from the financial side and the prioritization and a reexamination of my values and what was most important to me.
Yeah.
It was a great, great experience.
That's cool.
Yes, people can email me and I'll send them
okay. And is that the best way for people to reach you or are you active on LinkedIn or anything like that?
On LinkedIn, Kristen Scary, Facebook.
Okay.
I'm still on Instagram. I don't use it very much. But
okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Instagram is kscary, scary, because you know, scary.
Oh.
Kscary. Finally.
Perfect. And I'll put all those in the show notes. That's terrific. Yeah. So this has been great. And I'm just curious, another question popped in my head. Was it, you were part of a TV show when you were in New York, right? Was it based on your book?
It was. It was so much fun. It was 2.5 years of monthly spots. They called me their green living expert, which I don't like the title expert. I was green living knowledgeable, I will say. It was Good Day Rochester. It was 13 Wham in Rochester, New York. And I was with kind, truly expert news people that welcomed me to the show. And it was always some kind of a theme of how to use things around your house to make school supply containers for your kids, or what's local and in season right now, how to can things, how to
make
friends with the farmers, things I'd read and things I was sharing. And some of it had to do with the different challenges that I did for myself of making gifts for others or spending a month doing certain kinds of challenges, looking at how much trash you create and what kind of cleaning products you use, and being deliberate about the decisions you make about the food you buy or the clothing you buy. And I have had a whole shelf, as I glance over at it now, of books I read to educate myself. There's a full bibliography in the back of the book.
Wow. Too.
So some of it was my experience, but I wanted to ground it in, I guess, other people's experiences for one, and you know, why I knew what I was doing was correct or helpful or really fun.
That sounds really fun. It sounds like a great learning experience.
It was a lot of learning. I saved a lot of money too. So there was pretty great, very tangible return, I guess. And then just that I pretty much only still so many things carried over. Still buy a lot of secondhand clothing or secondhand items, trying to be very deliberate about things that I purchase to not be, to be animal cruelty free. And
yeah.
So those things became, I guess, my usual checklist, that a lot of it for doing it things over and over again. Once you practice something, whether it's decision-making or buying or relationships, all of the things, I think the practice brings the ease.
That's right. Some of the routine and the ease kind of shows up. So very cool. Well, Kristen, thank you so much for being here. I've loved the conversation. I knew I was going to. And just thank you for sharing, you know, your experience and what you've learned and the William Bridges stuff. That's some of my favorite stuff. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. A pleasure. And I just appreciate your positivity and things you've been through and how you're sharing what you're learning too as you continue kind of making your way and letting us tell our stories with you. I really, really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
I hope that you found nuggets of value in that conversation. I know that I did. That's one of the things that I love about talking to Kristen. I always walk away feeling valued and feeling wiser. So here are my three insights for thriving. Number one, I loved what Kristen shared from her dad. You have to have time to call your soul your own. I think that the need for us giving to ourselves and truly caring for ourselves is essential. It isn't selfish. I believe that when we care for ourselves, we're in a much better place to care for others. I don't think that we can add to someone else's life when we operate from a place of depletion. Number two, I really enjoyed how Kristen expressed it. The comfort is in the permission to go through the change and through the transition. That really resonated for me. I think that many times we place these unrealistic shoulds upon ourselves that take away from our own comfort and our own peace. And giving ourselves the permission to go through it and to experience it, I think does bring peace and comfort. And finally, number three, I thought that the question Kristen posed was very powerful. Where are the circles that I want to build? Because we all need that community, those circles, if we are to thrive. As always, I just wanted to say thanks on behalf of the entire team here at Unyielded, thriving no matter what. We appreciate you tuning in and for sharing the podcast with others. Our mission remains the same, to provide hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all flourish and thrive in our lives.